I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is primarily created, the Gadigal of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to elders both past and present, and extend that respect to all First Nations people listening today.
It took me basically giving up to become a good actor again.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I pretty much had to go, I honestly don't really care. Stage work is number one. I'm just sort of doing acting for fun. Mm. And then you start doing these self-tapes again that are so free and playful and all the things that we want to see,
yeah,
because you're not putting the pressure on.
My name's Emily McKnight, and this is An Actor Survives, a podcast that digs deep into Australia's most creative minds to uncover the tools you need to survive a career as an actor. Quick side note, this episode was recorded on Zoom, so please forgive the slightly dodgy sound quality. So welcome, Andrew Hurl, to An Actor Survives.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited, actually, to get your insights as the creator of Stage Milk, which I'm sure many of our listeners know about and follow, as well as an actor yourself. So there's lots to cover in this episode. So thank you so much for coming along.
Yeah.
First of all, I would love to know, though, how long have you been an actor and when did you first feel confident to call yourself that?
Oh, that's a good question at the end there. Yeah, I mean, first, like, I feel it's been pretty much forever. I hear this a lot when I'm interviewing people as well. It seems to be, for most people, a lifelong thing. I mean, I remember I grew up in England and I remember I left there when I was 11 and I remember doing years of like little drama weekends and stuff. So I must have been 9 or 10. You know, my mom shows me all the pictures of me in school plays and stuff and, you know, very, very young. So I think I always had a kind of proclivity for it and always loved it, being on stage and performing. But really, yeah, I was very serious. I kind of knew in high school. So from once I moved to Australia, kind of pretty early on, wanted to do it and did it all through high school. So yeah, and I was very lucky. Like a lot of actors had very, passionate drama teachers all through high school. So kind of all through my younger years, I was going away on, you know, those weekend workshops and doing courses and doing high school drama, doing all the school plays. So it's been most of my life since being a youngster.
When you were a youngster at that time, were you thinking of it as this is what I want to do?
I think from a pretty early age, yeah, I actually was. That is one thing. To my credit, I've not necessarily been particularly successful at all my pursuits, but I have pretty much committed to all the things that I loved early on. I wanted to do really acting, music, and strangely always wanted to run a business. I used to walk around with a little briefcase and kind of liked, my dad was a bit of an entrepreneur, and I kind of did and still try to pursue all three of those things. I mean, Stage Milk is basically that, and I get to do two of them together in a way. So I kind of did stick to it all. And, you know, having this one particular, well, it was two great drama teachers, but one in particular who was very, you know, because I grew up in Noosa, so we're kind of in a small town, but she'd gone to NIDA and NIDA was the, you know, and we've got to go to NIDA one day, you know. And so really, like, kind of it was really sold to me as like the dream of going to drama school and that was how you be a serious actor. So pretty much from, I think, about year 8 or 9, I was like, I'm going to go to NIDA or VCA at the time, was a very big school, go to one of those kind of drama schools. So, yeah, but your very interesting question, because I talk about this a lot in stage, about when I was kind of confident to call myself an actor. I mean, I think I'm really passionate about saying that and I think owning that, but I think it was probably after drama school that I started to do it, and then I think then like lots of actors I sort of stopped doing it because you get the inevitable horrible questions, you know, so I probably started saying I was a carpenter or different things, you know, when people would ask me out.
Wow,
and about.
Well, carpenters are pretty exciting answer.
Well, yeah, I think until you get acting work and then you desperately want everyone to ask you what you're doing. Like, yes, I'm an actor. What are you doing? Oh, yeah. I'm doing a film at the moment, but that would only happen very rarely. So, yeah, but I'm I really believe in being an actor. I'm very proud to be an actor, and I think it is something that we should own, you know. So I do generally try to say it if people ask me, but you can get the awkward questions that follow, and sometimes it's easier to just go, oh, yeah, I run a business or I do something else on the side.
And so did you go to NIDA as your teacher recommended?
I certainly tried. Funnily enough, I started out trying to go to NIDA, and one year, I guess this is my sort of entrepreneurial spirit coming through, but on the panel was a wonderful teacher, Andrea Moore, who's now the head of QUT. And I did very well as a 17-year-old, you know, in my sort of early round of getting into NIDA. It's a long process of callbacks. And I thought, oh, well, I'm guaranteed to get in next year if I did this well in my first year. And then I did worse the second year. And I thought, you know what, who's this lady who I'm auditioning for? Like, I just need to get her as a teacher and then I'll be in, surely. So I kind of tracked down Andrea, and she was like, oh, I don't really do coaching for people trying to get into drama school. But eventually she took me on and kind of became my sort of early major acting teacher. And she was like, Andrew, you need to go to Whopper. Whopper is this amazing school. And when I was growing up, it was very much VCA and NIDA that were considered the sort of major schools. But VCA went through some tough times around the time I was sort of auditioning as well. And she was like, look, Whopper is actually up there with NIDA. And I thought, well, here's someone who's on the NIDA panel saying Whopper's a great school. Yeah. So I added Whopper into the mix the following year. Didn't get into NIDA, but got into Whopper. And I thought, well, Andrea thinks it's amazing. And she was sort of everything for me. I really looked up to her and her opinion. And then I kept hearing all these great things. And so I went over and studied in Perth for 3 years. Did the
Wow. And then did you stay there and try and get work there and everything? Or did you then just come back to Sydney? Or
it's a funny school because generally everyone comes back over East. Even those actors who grew up in Perth, there's not really a sense that you stay there. I mean, a couple of people do eventually go back. I think one or two might have stayed for a while. But most people who go to Whopper, it's are you going to Sydney or Melbourne? That's really the conversation.
Yeah,
it's not
right.
Perth, Brisbane, it's Sydney or Melbourne. Like, that's it. And it's kind of interesting in that way because, I mean, what I loved about Whopper was that it was this, you know, I loved my time at Perth and I think Perth's a great place, but because there isn't the pressure that you have in Sydney or Melbourne, you kind of do feel like you're visiting and everyone in the year, I mean, in my year of 18 people, I think we had two from Perth. So it was a very kind of East Coast group, you know, so everyone was from Sydney, Melbourne. And what that means is everyone kind of bands together. You have this wonderful camaraderie in the group and you're kind of all like on this sort of journey together. I think when I've got friends at the moment who are at QUT and NIDA, and I think people kind of stay in their social circles, whereas we're all like, I don't know anyone in Perth. I've never been to Perth. So everyone kind of like gets really close. And I think that's one thing still to Whopper's credit is you get this wonderful community spirit, you know, in Whopper. And I think that's a lovely thing about training there. It's the same thing in, they say in England with Bristol, you know, the big drama school. It's like the one drama school that's outside of the kind of RADA Lambda, you know, in a London thing. And again, you kind of get this sense of you're in a kind of slightly more isolated part of England. And I think it's a good thing. Same with the Royal Welsh School. Like, I don't know. I think there's something nice about it being a bit out of the crucible of, you know, crazy big cities and the pressure that comes with that.
Mm. And when you finished drama school and came back to Sydney, did you get an agent and launch into lots of work?
Yeah, I'm trying to think how honest I am here. I've got some funny stories. I mean, long story short, I didn't do very well out of drama school. And it was really tough. And yeah, I think, really, really, really tough. And it was probably amplified for me because my very close circle did incredibly well around me.
I reckon that's one of the hardest things post-drama school.
Yeah, because you feel very, you know, you go through your training feeling very even. You know, and it feels very much, it's really not about those superficial elements. It's really just like you kind of know within the year who are the strongest actors, and there's kind of a real respect for being a good actor. And then you know, have this, particularly with Whopper, because no one really comes to see you while you're there. So all the pressure is on the showcase. And so all of a sudden you've kind of gone through with this structure for 3 years and kind of understanding like you know, the I guess the somewhat hierarchy in the year. Not that that really matters, but you kind of get a sense of where you stand. And then you graduate and it's like someone's just like shaken up a protein shake and just like, you know, it's like a whole different, and it just becomes, maybe this is a slightly cynical view, but I think it does become a very superficial game, because I think what happens is the agents kind of go in, this is maybe again being a bit cynical, but the agents kind of go in going, oh, well, these are whopper grads. You know, these are some of the best young actors in the year or in the country. So they're all going to be pretty good. It's more about like their kind of energy or their kind of their look really and their casting. And so it becomes, yeah, quite difficult when you see, you know, immediately people doing very, very well and you kind of maybe felt like you were a strong actor in the year or, you know, and it doesn't necessarily correlate to the level of agent that you get. But I was lucky in that I did manage to sign with Natalie Hall, who's still my current agent, and I have had a wonderful relationship with and worked out really well in the end. But I think obviously, you know, that it's a nice ego boost coming out and being offered all the best agents. And it's, yeah, it's a funny, funny time.
It is. I was the same. I didn't kind of get immediate success and then got an agent, but they ended up not being a particularly good one. Mm-hmm. And I ended up kind of leaving them not very long afterwards because I found out that they weren't so good. But yeah, I was exactly the same. It was that real struggle and confusion and kind of difficult too, because you want to be supportive and excited for your peers.
Yeah.
And so it's hard when you can feel yourself just going into that competitive mode or jealous mode or, it's tough.
Yeah. It's really tricky. And I mean, I'm very passionate about trying to sort of help, because we work a lot of actors who like work with us before drama school and then whilst graduating or leaving drama school. And it's something I'm really passionate about because it held me back for so long. I mean, this is being very dramatic and this is a very privileged kind of position to be in, talking about like going to one of the best drama schools and being like, oh, I didn't get like an amazing agent straight away, like to call, you know, but it did somewhat feel like a bit of an ego death to me. Like I remember like, yeah, I mean, I was just, in a really bad way for, yeah, probably it lingered for a couple of years really afterwards. And you're kind of, your value as an actor really gets tied to it because you go, oh, well, I wasn't really wanted or I'm not good. Or maybe I'm like, I don't know, like you really, yeah, you can really lose a lot of confidence. And I'm sure you have this as well. One of the most difficult things about leaving drama school, and for anyone who's listening who's in this position, like, it's the conversations afterwards when you're going out for coffee and everyone's talking about the auditions they've got and you're sitting there going, shit, I don't have that audition, or, you know, that sort of, and again, as you say, it's very, you have to be very, very grounded and comfortable in yourself to really lift others and to be happy for their success. We'll maybe get to this, but I got to a point where I broke through that and I nowadays, like, I'm an absolute, like, genuinely happy for everyone's success.
Yeah.
And I encourage every actor to, as soon as possible, kill that part of themselves that is like thinking you're in a competition. I know it's easier said than done, but it is the greatest thing, I think, holding you back in terms of being happy as an actor. But
and
it
also
is
celebrating your community. Like, it's so much better once you do get into that mode of celebrating everybody. Like, you feel like you're part of it, even though it wasn't your success. It gives you almost the same joy.
And also what I'd like, would love to get across for anyone who's listening, who's in this space, is like, I can now tell you with just 100% conviction, what feels like this small industry where you have to outdo people, I promise you in 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you are going to get more opportunities from being on a team with someone and from lifting other people than you will from the fact that your classmate booked an audition before you. Like, it's such a long game, but also, like, when I think about the actors who particularly I was jealous of, the ones I was very close with, they have put me in short films. They have gone on to become agents and assistant casting directors and directors. Like, you really, like, the idea of being in competition with anyone, I think, is a very short-sighted way of viewing acting. And I think you really do live together, as kind of like airy-fairy as that sounds, like, it actually happens. And I think if you can, like, support people and encourage people, like, you know, it really, that they'll be the ones that employ you, they put you in stuff, they recommend you. Like the amount of work I've got from people because of their success, rather than like they've never taken success from me. And also it's just such a bigger industry than your immediate group of people. So if you want to have a competitive outlook, which I don't think you should have at all, but if you do want to have it in a bigger scale, like, yeah, I want to win and I want to play this game. But certainly this, it's just completely inconsequential to be competitive with your best mate from drama school. You know, it's sort of like there's another 500 actors who you're going to be up against for those big roles. And
eventually that's a way to get work if you don't get an agent straight away, or you are in the industry without an agent now, by working with and celebrating the people around you.
100%.
As you say, they might end up being casting agents or in something, and somebody says, oh, we need somebody that describes you, and then they go, hey, my friend blah blah can help, you know, can be part
of it. I think it's one of the best, like, it's a very long-term play, but like if you just keep working on your craft and being a great actor and just hanging around in communities, like people see it and people like, you know, like I've seen it a lot with the actors who maybe didn't have that initial success but stayed in kind of communities and did lots of indie theater and short films, and people kind of see like, this person's awesome to work with. They're a great actor. Because even if they're not doing, it's not about your CV when it's peer-to-peer. Like it's all about skill. People want to like give people work to people that they know are good. Because everyone knows, in the industry, if you're an actual actor, everyone knows they look better working with good actors.
Yeah.
So people want to work with good actors. So if you can kind of like just stay in the kind of world and just keep getting better, it's like, yeah, your peers and people around you will give you as much work as these kind of like, you know, what we often see as kind of gatekeepers who are very far away from us will give us work. Like it's like play both games, like try to do the big fishing and like get those big opportunities and get in with casting directors and big agents and all the rest of it. But also like your immediate world is going to give you so many opportunities as well. It might just take a bit longer.
Mm. And then so post official Whopper training, did you kind of continue doing any kind of your own classes for yourself as an actor? And then obviously you formed Stage Milk to create classes for other actors.
I didn't. Okay. And that is like the greatest mistake. And that's something now I'm very passionate about. And one of the reasons I really advocate what we do at Stage Milk, not trying to necessarily sell Stage Milk, but like the principles of Stage Milk, which people can absolutely take on and do in their own time. And I also think I was around a group of people, like I say, pretty much every single one of my immediate friendship group was incredibly successful. And that energy, in a very toxic way, was a sense of like, we don't train, we don't do indie theater, we don't do short films. Right. It was kind of like, I'm in the audition circuit. And because I was in that environment, even though I wasn't quite in that game to the same level they were, I sort of took that energy on, and I sort of felt, I don't know, maybe just felt a little bit like, that was the way forward, and almost maybe looked down on like, I wasn't moving forward if I went and did an indie show or did a short film or went and did training again. And my God, was that a bad attitude, which just absolutely set me back so far. It's really amazing at Stage Milk. Sometimes we'll have actors who have literally just graduated NIDA or a big drama school anywhere in the world. And they're like, yeah, I just graduated like a couple of months ago and just wanted to get straight into it. And I'm like, that is so cool.
Yeah.
It's like, you can just like the skill level you can go on, like the sort of exponential growth you can go on is massive.
And it's like, about practice, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like just continuing your craft.
Yeah. And look, what I learned, what was really interesting, because I talked before about graduating drama school, we all felt kind of even. Like if we all did a self-tape at the end of drama school, you wouldn't be like, that guy is leagues ahead. Mm-hmm. But what I did notice, and this is the great dilemma of being an actor, I think, particularly in Australia, is that if you're in the audition circuit, you get ridiculously good. So what I found happened was the actors who signed with those top 10 agents who were auditioning weekly or a couple of times a week for like major projects, their comfort, their ease on camera was just insane. They were so, so good. And I was like, we were like the same level and now you are destroying me. And I get up because I get my one audition every 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, throw in an American accent, which I'm not working on enough. And I'm like surviving. Like literally that's the difference. I'm surviving and my mates are over here just being so playful and fun and trying things, all that wonderful stuff that you really need to book work. And so, and particularly it's more extreme with the actors who maybe didn't get agents or got very small agents where they're not even auditioning for film and TV. Maybe they're just doing commercial work. So you get this like massive change in people's ability because, as you say, it is just a game of practice at a certain point. So the best bit of advice for anyone who's trying to be a professional actor, particularly for film and TV, if you do not get auditions naturally and you're not thrown into that regular practice by, you know, the industry and by your agent and casting directors, et cetera, you have to replicate it. Mm-hmm. So you have to be getting together with friends and doing self-tapes or going to class because you're just going to get left behind.
How do you do that within your own acting? Like, do you follow along the Stage Milk things for yourself or do you kind of have other mates that you work on or do you actually indeed get auditions once a week or whatever?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say, and I kind of, this doesn't really happen anymore, but sometimes people are like, I mean, back in the day, people are like, how could you be running Stage Milk when you're like, you're not even a famous actor? And I'm like, you know, but it actually doesn't happen anymore. It happened, funnily enough, earlier on. And I think now people acknowledge that like, it's a separate thing to sort of teach and coach and stuff.
Absolutely.
For me, I absolutely do acknowledge that Stage Milk is like number one and acting has been second, if not third to that, really over the last kind of 5 or 6 years.
Oh, okay. So you've kind of changed in terms of your priorities.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like, so some people might, so I say that to sort of be a caveat for me not being a hypocrite because there's a lot of things that I encourage literally every day that I'm not necessarily always doing, but that's because I'm not trying to be in the same game. Yeah, so that's sort of one thing within it that like it's not necessarily me being hypocritical. It's just that like actually Stage Milk is very demanding on my time and I really love that and I'm really passionate about becoming like a genuinely great acting teacher and trying to help people unlock things and directing actors and everything that I do within Stage Milk. So acting sort of number two to that, but absolutely I do what my sort of running plan at the moment is like, because I'm so aware of this stuff, because I believe everything I say, obviously, is that I kind of stay at a level to keep fit enough. One thing I do every day is read Shakespeare. I try to read a monologue or a sonnet out loud. I try to read poetry a lot. You know, I just try to work on text and, you know, perform a little bit every day, things like little voice warm-ups and stuff, just things to kind of keep the machine sort of working. But fortunately, I've actually been auditioning a lot. I moved recently up to Brisbane and I thought that was like career over, but it's been really busy. So I've actually been very fortunate and I do audition enough now that I'm really improving as an actor. I think I've had probably my best year as an actor since graduating, auditioning a lot, getting probably more callbacks and opportunities than I've had. That does keep me going enough. But absolutely, like, and this is what I want to get across to people is like, I'm surviving and I'm probably doing more work than most actors. Like, I find it a little bit funny with acting that people are so keen to chuck it on their Instagram, make it their identity, tell everyone at, you know, family dinner at Christmas that they're an actor and they're doing next to nothing on it. And I kind of go, you are literally in one of like, got to be like top five most difficult competitive pursuits a human can just do ever. And yep. You're approaching it like you would approach like literally a bad hobby. Like most people put more time into their, you know, random hobby or playing gaming or something than they do at pursuing acting. And yet they claim the full identity of being an actor. I acknowledge there is levels of burnout and mental health issues around that. I'm not like encouraging like just blatantly being a hustler for no reason. But like I think generally most actors could be doing a lot more and it doesn't have to be work.
Yeah. And as you say, like it's not necessarily doing more. I mean, when you look at doing more, maybe it's about reading something out loud every day or just doing actually some of your own work as opposed to the hustling. Like it's not just about the hustle.
No, and that's the thing. And that's the funny thing when people like, it doesn't really happen that much, but if anyone's ever like, oh, Andrew, well, you're pushing like this hustle culture or this idea of like just working all the time and this kind of energy, you know, like Larry Moss talks about like should be like a full-time job, do 8 hours a day. But even Larry Moss, who's got to be up there as like the most extreme in this sort of you know, encouragement of advice, you know, saying it's like a full-time job, do it 8 hours a day. Even he's going like, absolutely one of those things is reading and watching great art. How easy is this homework? But it's still amazing that people don't do it. I mean, even just reading a play out loud every night and practicing dialogue, rolling it around in your mouth, talking it out loud, you know, looking up words you don't know, references. Like, if you just did that every day, like your growth as an actor would be insane, you know. But I'm the first to acknowledge as well that the challenge of being an actor is that that can be very hard to do. You know, it's...
Yeah, and you, you might have motivation to do it for a week or two, and then it's easy to kind of let that go, which is why it's good to have some kind of community, whether it's something like Stage Milk or just within your own peer group to kind of encourage or have accountability around.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably the single biggest issue with like taking on, you know, advice that both of us, I'm sure, you know, encourage, and if actors ask us, we talk about, you know, working on this stuff, is that the outcome is so far away from the work. So you can work incredibly hard and you are just completely in the hamster wheel. Like, there is a level where like the industry may just take no notice. Like, a lot of people come to me and like, should I change my headshots, do it, do this, this, and this? And you're like, you are not even in the game. It's not about your headshot. You are just not known at all. There is like trying to, you know, so there's elements of this industry where you hit a lot of ceilings and it can be really frustrating. So to tell someone to read a play every day or work on a self-tape every week, you run out of steam for that, because you do that for even the best people can maybe do it for 3-6 months. And then you go, I haven't had an audition in 6 months. Yeah. I've been emailing agents every day and like, I haven't had someone even write back to me. Or at the next level up, I do get auditions, but I've auditioned 20 times this year and I've never had a callback. You know, at every level, there's these different things where it's like so hard to feel the traction that you don't often get the ball rolling. When it feels very hopeless or very kind of far away, it's pretty hard to get out of bed in the morning and go, I'm going to do a half an hour voice warm up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so far away from that helping you. But, you know, if you get a role, like I'm on hold for this thing at the moment. Like, if I get this, I'm already like getting up every morning again and like, let's get ready. Let's work on my American accent. Let's do this stuff. So it doesn't take much to get the fire up. You go and do a great masterclass. You go and work with, you know, often the funny thing was when Larry Moss used to come to Australia, people would be so, they'd be buzzing for like 3 months. Like, all my friends doing Larry Moss, they'd be like, I'm up every morning doing a voice warm up and I'm reading 8 plays a week. And like, and then you'd see him like, you know, 3 or 4 months later and they're like, yeah, I've kind of stopped that a little bit. You know, it's hard. It's hard to keep going. So I do acknowledge that, but whatever you can manufacture, or as you say, is it community, whatever motivates you, it's the game. And if you can get that motor going and you can practice, you know, it'll work. And you'll, whether it'll work in terms of becoming a famous actor, that's not really what I'm talking about, but it will work in terms of mastering this craft and becoming a great actor. Absolutely. If you can continue to put in the work.
Yeah. Do you have any kind of advice apart from just find a way to do it? In terms of getting through that kind of funk, you do the masterclass or you get the job and you do all this work and you're buzzing and all of that stuff and you're like, yes, I'm an actor and I can say it loud and proud now. And then, you know, 4 months later,
yeah,
you're back down in the slump.
I mean, I think, look, one of the main things to, I think, be successful at anything is having a great deal of self-awareness and kind of knowing yourself and what actually motivates you.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's something to just observe in yourself and find like what is going to motivate you first of all. But as you say, I think community is massive. I mean, I'm being a bit radical, but it's because I kind of like, I guess I'm increasingly getting more direct with my advice the more I do this. But like, you know, looking back, I have an amazing friendship group. I love my friends and they remain my friends that I was, you know, have mostly been with since drama school. But the best thing you can do is get around friends who are, you know, you're cultivating your friendship group. A lack of cynicism and just find friends who actually make shit, who are proactive. You know, it's like if you find that group, you just slay, like you just kill it. Like, because you all rise together. It's that classic thing of you're sort of the average of your best 5 friends. And it's particularly true in the creative arts, I think, because you create work and you bounce off each other. So I think creating a, you know, or finding your sort of group, your people, if you will, and a passionate group of actors or creatives is the absolute best way, I think, to stay motivated, because they'll lift you.
Yeah.
So that I think is a big bit of advice. And then other than that is just like, find your motivation and go with it. But again, so I'm really going on with this one, but the other thing that I would say is just, a lot of this isn't hard work if you're in a good place.
Yeah.
So what was quite interesting, so I was having a bit of a tough time in Sydney just before COVID, and that was when I came back to Queensland and to sort of back to my sort of hometown, went back to Noosa. I was having a really tough time and I was doing virtually no acting. Like, I wasn't even really doing a lot of these things I'm talking about reading plays and watching stuff. It was just sort of surviving. And that's often the case when you're in big cities, for anyone listening anywhere in the world. But when I went back to Noosa, got a bit of my sort of mental health back in order, just feeling better about life, I would just go to the beach with a copy of Hamlet and just learn all the Hamlet soliloquies. Like, I was just walking along the beach doing it. That was not an ounce of work, because I love Shakespeare and I love working on monologues. Like, it was like my old, you know, I used to do that when I was growing up, trying to get into NIDA and stuff. I'd go and learn monologues on the beach. So like, when you're in a good place, none of this stuff is work. If it's work, then why are you shouldn't really probably even be doing this. So it's interesting as well, like, a lot of things will just naturally happen if you can just kind of get out of your way and get to a place where you're feeling a bit better about yourself and cultivating a kind of a more grounded, better approach to life. And I know that's a very difficult thing to do, and we're all struggling with that a little bit, particularly with everything that's happening in the world. But if you can come back into yourself and find that sense of yourself and just basically find some happiness again, you'll start doing the things, because you did acting because it was fun.
Yeah. And so what about the slump that you can get in when you get a rejection? How do you yourself handle that? Or if you'd rather talk about how you would advise someone to handle that?
Yeah. I got to say, I'm pretty good at handling rejection in acting. I kind of early on really went in with this attitude that, like, you just audition to impress casting directors. And even that is not the best attitude, but you go in the famous Bryan Cranston advice that was very viral a few years ago. It's sort of that opportunity to act. I kind of went in with that attitude that it's like, it's an opportunity to do something. And if anything, you're just doing good work to make relationships with casting directors. That's really the game. Just keep doing good work. And in the very, very long run, something will work out. And as I'm sure you know and other actors know, just to get in with those really 10, 12 casting directors, if that, in Australia, that are the complete gatekeepers of the industry, is a very hard thing to do. So doing a good job and just getting those relationships is huge in and of itself. So I think I went in quite early on just going, oh, you don't really get work. You just do it and try to do a good job as a kind of long run sort of thing. So I think I was pretty good at letting it go. But recently where it's kind of come back is when you now start to get closer. And I was going to write a stage newsletter about this, because I was like, I'm so good at handling rejection. And I literally, you know, throw away the script straight away after doing it. And people are, you know, you'll tell your mom you did this audition and you'll forget about it. 3 weeks later, she's like, so did you get that role? And you're like, what? But the funny thing is, when you get closer again, that part of you that wants to cling and get the success comes back, because you go, oh, I'm literally with the producer right now. I'm on hold. So it gets harder when you get close again, or it's something that feels nearby. But honestly, I think for me, it's tough. But I think I actually, to be honest, this is a bit of a contrarian view. I don't think that's as big of a problem as people think. The rejection, everyone in the broader world thinks rejection is the great struggle of being an actor. It's absolutely not. You get quite used to the rejection. The bigger frustration is not getting the opportunity in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I talk to more actors than anyone, like, pretty much. Like, that's a big call, but like, I do just talk to so many in what I do in my personal life and with Stage Milk and acting and everything. And that's the frustration. When I talk to actors, we do coaching sessions like every day where we talk to actors. And I don't really hear a lot of people being like, no one's like annoyed that they got a massive role, you know, for a big Hollywood film or even a local TV show and then didn't get it. I don't really hear that a lot. You know, of course you do, but it's not the same as like, hey, I don't get auditions. Like, how do I just get commercial auditions, or like, how do I get in the room?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, like for both TV and theater, but I feel like we all should all be just auditioning all the time.
Yeah. I think even in Canada, America, the UK, these slightly bigger industries or much bigger industries, your smaller to mid-level actor does audition a lot. Like you know, it's quite normal to just get auditions. There's more kind of open casting calls and different things. In Australia, the great struggle is that there really is like a 1% that is seriously in the audition circuit. Then there's like, you know, I'll throw me in there as like a top 5% who kind of does audition in that higher level, but not as often as you'd like. And then there's just a massive amount of actors who like just sort of aren't even in the game. They might get like an occasional very small film and TV audition, but they're just not really on the radar, and there's not enough casting directors, not enough work, and there's too many great actors. People get very frustrated. They go, well, they're not seeing new actors. And you kind of go, well, even a kind of famous actor in Australia doesn't have enough work. So why would they? I always find it funny. Like, why would they take a risk on you where you're not as confident, you're not as comfortable, you don't have any experience, and you're not doing as good of work because this guy or this person is super comfortable and doing really cool shit in their auditions. So I also understand it from the casting director's point of view. It's sort of like, you know, there's 20 or 30 people that you can bring in for the next, you know, big supporting role in a new Aussie TV show who are just going to be fucking awesome. And so it's very, very hard for the hundreds, if not thousands, of other actors who are just trying to get in that room.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a fucking brick wall and you're looking for a crack. There's just never going to be a door. So you've really got to, yeah, I think there is a level of, you do have to really chip away, and you are hoping to find like a unique way in. I think one of the worst things you can do is go follow someone else's path.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest bit of advice is to fucking really lean into your own authenticity, whatever that is, and find your world and kind of dig into that as much as you can. If I had to observe the one quality of success, it's the people who are very clear in who they are. There's a real crystallization of like where, and you could kind of, you see them and you can cast them. You can kind of go, I get that person. They really ooze who they are. And I think really that's the key. And I think a lot of actors come out of drama school and think there's a sort of machine you can rely on, and there really isn't, which then goes to the very obvious advice, which is said a lot but is still valuable and people don't take up enough, is like creating your own work, because then you create work around your kind of what you're passionate about, or creating theater or what in whatever realm it is. But that's always very good advice, because you get to show the industry what your kind of strength is, because no one's going to guess it.
Yeah. And what about the overseas thing? Like, you know, often that's kind of the advice, is try and go overseas and get work because there's more work there. And you've mentioned that you've got an English background. So is that something that you've done?
Yeah. I mean, again, just to, I guess, be a bit provocative, but I think it's not a great move. We're talking a lot. So I get to interview a lot of the biggest casting directors, a lot of people. We're interviewing two major LA casting directors. Literally later on this week, I'm interviewing two and then a third next week. So I interview and I know most of the major casting directors across Australia and America. And we've interviewed some in England. The American English, the American Australian connection is not what it was. And I think it's only going to get harder. The American union is cracking down on it because American actors don't want all these Aussie actors taking all their work. Visas, ever since Trump, got more difficult. America is a very difficult place to live. A lot of Aussies are coming back just because it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people love America. You know, there's parts of America that we all love, I think, and look up to in a weird way as the sort of like, you know, cultural standard or something of, you know, England and Australia. We kind of, so much of their content we consume, but it's sort of actually living there. It's incredibly expensive. It's very difficult to live. The visa issues are just constant. It's very, very hard to be an actor there. Canada is a little bit better for Australians, but again, there's the same issues with kind of, you know, creating and getting things going because you are Australian. England, there's no hope, to be a bit provocative here. I mean, England, even for myself, born and raised, English passport in hand, if you identify or come across as Australian, there's a real snobbery in the British industry. And I think they would almost acknowledge it. So I think it is tough in the major kind of like English speaking countries you'd want to go to. Doesn't mean it can't be done, but I think a lot of people think that it's something you can just jump over and do. I would only really recommend it if you know that's where you want to be. So if you just love the British industry, the Canadian industry, the American industry, do it and do it as soon as possible and just start making it work, because it will work. You'll get the visas sorted. If you know it's what you want to do, life will kind of work around you and you'll make it work. But it's not something you can do casually. And one thing I very much recommend is never hopping. Unless you are famous or like a high profile actor, hopping is one of the worst things you can do. And no one talks about this, but you just go backwards. So many people I know who went to the UK for 5 years, they come back. Unless you got actual genuine work that's going to be exciting when you come back to Australia, most people are just like, where have you been?
That's so interesting, because I feel like that's in opposition to advice, at least maybe it's just outdated because I'm older, but when I kind of was finishing drama school, one of the bits of advice was, you know, go overseas. In fact, go overseas and study more and then come back and you'll be better. You'll have more opportunity because people will go, ooh, she studied in RADA.
Yeah, I guess what I was talking about there is more, it's thinking in the years world. Like if a lot of people are like, I'm going to go to England in 5 years, or going, obviously RADA would be 3 years, or Lambda, like those big comprehensive things. I think absolutely to go and like, yeah, if you do six, like obviously travel is awesome. I think learning with people is awesome. So if you like say, yeah, went to London for a year and you know, did a year course, so you went and did like, you know, Atlantic summer school in America. Fantastic. Mm. Now that's awesome to do. I think it's more like what people think, and I would have thought this, is like it all accumulates, you know, like it's like I'm building that equally. But what people forget is it kind of is like a memory game.
Yeah, because if you're not there, you're not in front of the casting agent's face all the time and being part
of it. And it's very, people underestimate, particularly in Australia, how hard it is to get in with that group. The other thing as well, I'm obviously very passionate about this topic because I probably more than anyone get the email every day, I want to be famous, I want to get to LA. Like I get a lot of that really young, aspiring, want to get famous energy. So maybe I'm a little bit more harsh on this. But it's like, you know your local industry the best. Mm. And that's something not to be underestimated. So the advantage you have with your networks, with your community, with your cultural understanding, with your accent, just all the things that are in your favor naturally by being in one industry are just such a big advantage. So I think to really distill it, if you love a certain country, go and go sooner and make that your base and start again there. Or focus local, build profile, get some success, and then you can hop because you've got profile. Once you've got profile, everything unlocks because you can say, I've literally been in a TV show. I've got a great agent. Everyone, it all, that you get that momentum and it's quite easy to be international.
Yeah, wow. That's very interesting. Thank you. In terms of acting styles and methods, I'm very interested to know from yourself as a working actor, if you have a method that you particularly follow, and then therefore also what you would teach.
Yeah. So luckily at Whopper, they were really great at never being too prescriptive with a method. I think that is one of the great downfalls of many training facilities, is they're very, very strict. It can sometimes work with certain actors, but then if you're grinding against that, it's just going to be a nightmare for 3 years and you're going to...
And then it's easy if you're grinding against it to then go like, oh, I'm not a good actor, or...
Exactly.
I've failed as an actor because this method doesn't work for me. Yeah,
totally. It's a problem. Totally. Yeah. Big, big problem. So I was very blessed that it was quite free in a way. But with what I do at Stage Milk, I'm kind of always reading and rereading stuff. And, you know, I'll go and do workshops and things to kind of upskill myself as a teacher as well. So I'm pretty well versed in like a lot of the methodologies and teaching to stuff. I mean, I think like the really interesting thing has been, you know, I'll just say this. When I interview the best actors literally in the world, like I, you know, get to interview, to me anyway, like I've interviewed some actors who I go, you know, are genuine like idols. I always ask them the same question. And I'll just say, not a single one of them has ever said they have a method, which is incredibly interesting. And it's not that there was never a method, but it does hit a point where it seems to become, the words you hear all the time are play, intuitive, rehearsal, trying stuff. You get to all these words that are all about in that kind of realm. And that's kind of been the same with me. I think once you get the principles of what you're trying to do, you kind of do just throw at it what it needs, and you kind of get where the scene needs to go and what you need to do. And you'll only really turn to tools when there's a problem. You know, you might go, I think this could be helped by an objective, or throwing some actions down, or thinking about my targeting. But fundamentally, it's really just about knowing what you're doing and being very detailed with what you're doing and finding the images and connections with stuff. So, yeah, so these days I don't do like I like to break things down into beats. I like to do work on imagination. Like, I'll circle maybe people, places, objects, and events. So like kind of references in the script, and just make sure I'm connected with them. And then really just think about why, like what is happening in the script? What am I going after? What's sort of the goal of it? But honestly, like, maybe I'm getting a bit philosophical here, but it's a great opportunity for me to sort of talk more freely about this stuff. But like, every method seems to be a trap. Like, I was talking with an actor this morning, completely in the head about objectives. Oh, I can't get objectives. It's like the word objective has sent them into an absolute paranoia. And it has for hundreds of actors. And I'm at the point now where I go, that word I literally would offer at this point is more unhelpful than it is helpful to the majority of actors. And that is probably the most famous word in acting methodologies. What's your objective? And it causes more problems than solutions. And people might hear that and go, Andrew, you're putting a terrible message out there. Like, objectives are important. They're the bedrock of every great methodology. Yes, probably. But like with anything, when it's poorly taught, when it's not really understood, everyone just goes, oh, you got to have an objective. And I don't think I've ever heard it really taught very well and articulated very well. It's actually a seemingly simple idea, but it's very complicated. I interviewed just recently the writer of The Action's Thesaurus. I don't know if you know that very famous.
Oh, yes, I've got it up there. Yep.
Yeah. on almost every actor's bookshelf.
Yeah. There's an app now too.
Yeah. It was one of the most interesting interviews I've ever done. She said, Andrew, my everything about that book is misinterpreted. It is completely wrong. People misteach it everywhere I go. It was never meant to be a prescriptive action on every word, play it every time, the exact way I've ever seen it taught. The writer of the book saying you're doing it wrong. And it's just, it's just interesting for me, because I go, like, so much of acting, teaching, and methodology, I think, and I'm part of this world, you know, teachers are paid to have a, not that I'm saying I'm doing this, but I'm saying, you know, I understand teachers are going, like, it's such an ephemeral craft. You want to have a structure. And we as humans, I think, want to put things into structures. So it's kind of nice to go, let's make a formula. Let's have 12 steps, or let's have this, this, and this. But like, so often it's so poorly taught, and it just makes the problem worse, and it just complicates things. And I am absolutely obsessed with simplifying things and finding clarity with things, because I felt incredibly lost. And to an extent, I still do with a lot of these terms.
Amazing. Well, I feel like this whole episode has been a series of amazing survival tips. but do share with us, what would your top five actor survival tips be?
Well, we have covered a few, but to reiterate, I think the first one is that one around auditions, seeing it as an opportunity to act. Someone else's advice, but I absolutely stole it. I think it's great. So enjoy it for what it is. It's an opportunity to play a character. It's a great opportunity. You are blessed to be there. What a great chance to get in front of a casting director. And also, what great fun. And this is the thing we miss a lot in the depression and the struggle of being an actor sometimes. There is actually a chance. Crazy stuff happens. Like, a lot of my friends got famous. I have got some really cool things. You will probably get some really exciting things happen. How cool is that? So getting an audition is like a really great thing, to see that as an opportunity. I think that's the first one. So reframing that. Next one, we also talked about community. Find your friends, find your community, and work at them. Don't just abuse your friends. Hey, come read for me. You know, if they're working on a short film, offer to do a reading. If they're having a tough day, offer to take them out for dinner, buy them a drink, do those things to support your community. And your friends, your community will give you back 100-fold what you could ever give them. You know what I mean? Just to have that community. Probably next thing is like just upskill. We've talked a lot about, like, you can probably hear my passion in like mastering the craft of acting. There are superficial elements, but becoming a great actor is the divider. Like, particularly when you start to audition for great people, people can tell great acting. Again, we talked about my fourth one, support other people's success. So if someone gets something, like, I don't know, I'm not a big Instagram user, but things that it's sort of part of our life now. Like, if someone, one of your friends gets something, like, reshare it, or like get them some flowers, or take them out for a drink, you know, congratulate them. And you become this, like, and honestly, I mean, I don't want to get too airy-fairy, but I think weirdly, I get more opportunities at the moment because I have that energy. There is an energy around sort of like wanting other people to succeed. And I honestly feel like, because I'm so thinking quite broadly about acting and the importance of acting, I don't even want to get the role if there is someone better for it. Like, the more you sort of reframe it, people feel that energy that you're more like a peer rather than this desperate kind of hungry person. So I think that's a huge one, supporting other people's success. And then the final one is probably just like an acting tip, and we've talked a bit about this. It's a bloody hard game, particularly if you've got no nepotism, no natural advantages. I mean, we've all got little natural advantages. You know, you'll probably get a role where they need someone who's incredible at the flute, you know, and that will be at some point. But generally speaking, unless you have those huge advantages, it's going to be tough. And the way you cut through that is not by being safe and secure and the same as everyone else and solid. I mean, it's good to be a solid actor, but is really more about authenticity and play and making choices. So I encourage every actor to avoid being too neutral. And it's very hard when you want to impress a casting director or whoever else, but just to go into everything going like, what do I want to do with it? And see it all as a longer learning game. If you come into the room and do like an odd choice, they can just tell you to, oh, I know we kind of want it more like this, but they still acknowledge it. It's like, fuck, that was brave. You came in and just like tried something. You know, unless you're completely not self-aware and you like come into like a Lord of the Rings audition and do it like as a stand-up comedy routine. Like, there's that element. But as long as you're like not, you're doing it from a genuine place, usually taking that swing, taking that chance, making a choice is going to be a better way to go than trying to be safe and get into that more neutral space. I just don't think, unfortunately, there's no success I have seen that comes from neutrality in this industry. It's not an industry where second, third, fourth place gets put in. You don't. You only get put in if the director loves you, the producer loves you. Someone really has to be in your corner, and that's not going to happen unless you really fucking put your stamp on the work that you're doing and make some choices with it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much.
I feel it's turned into me. I hope I'm not preaching too much, but I'm, you know, I love talking about this stuff. And you know, as we said right at the start, like, I had a really tough time and felt incredibly isolated leaving drama school. And I wish someone would have kind of encouraged me to find the craft and see the long game in it, you know. Because a lot of those friends, I'll just say fine, a lot of those friends that I was so jealous of are now pulling out of acting or doing other stuff. Like, a lot of the immediate success, like, it all levels out and everyone chills out after a couple of years and gets kind of just easy about it. And it just kind of becomes, you know, so a lot of things that are really difficult early on, they just kind of go away. And it's really just like, can you stay in it and keep getting better? And like, if you can do that, you're in with a really good shot of having some success in one of the coolest industries in the world.
Absolutely. And if you can keep that love, then keep doing it. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of An Actor Survives with me, Emily McKnight. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Instagram, and share with your friends. Your support means a lot. Thanks. The music used in this podcast is an excerpt from Saw, a marimba concerto by Robert Otomo.